In these afternoon guided meditations, we've been looking at the four Brahma Viharas, these divine abidings of kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And we've done a little bit with the first three, so today I thought I'd say a few words about equanimity. And do a little bit of some sort of guided meditation because it's also taught as a thing we can practice, a reflection to bring into our meditation. In a way, we've been practicing equanimity all along with throughout our Vipassana practice and with these other Brahma Viharas because it's woven into the fabric of things a lot, in the same way that we learn about patience by coming into contact with our impatience. We learn a lot about equanimity, this balance of mind, by seeing when we get out of balance. And in terms of its relationship to kindness and compassion and this appreciative joy of mudita that I know Marie spoke about and did some practice with yesterday. It serves as kind of, they rest on the foundation of equanimity, you could say. It's what allows them to actually develop and become to their full extent, because we need this sort of balance of mind to understand that while we wish beings well, we wish them to be free of suffering, we want their happiness, their good fortune to continue in these three ways that we could say this quality of kindness turned in these three directions. We also know that their happiness, their ease, their freedom from suffering is not dependent on our wishes for them. That may be part of things, but it's not, they have their own lives to live, and things will unfold according to nature and according to the actions and choices they make. And this is true of all beings. And so there's a direct relationship in a certain sense, in a very obvious way, and in terms of the way this is taught as a practice, there's a relationship between the quality of equanimity or balance, upekkha is the Pali word, and the teachings, the understanding on the teachings of cause and effect and the teachings on karma. This word karma is widely used in English language, at least. It's one of these words that's become adopted into, English is made up of words from all over the place. And karma is, I'm sure it's in all the dictionaries now, because it's so widely used, and it's not really well understood. The literal meaning of that word is action. We often use it to point to the results or fruits of actions, but karma itself just means action. And there's another karma, vipaka, means the fruits or the results of actions. So there's a lot of, it's in common usage, but there's a lot of misunderstanding about it, what it actually points to, because we think of karma as sort of, getting what we deserve, or someone getting what they deserve. If you do something bad will happen to you, and we hold it in a superficial way to some extent. And we also can sometimes find ourselves using it as though we could use it to point out why someone's circumstances are the way they are, why their life is going. Well, there must have been some bad karma. References to good karma, bad karma, in an offhand way that I think actually isn't very helpful. As though we can attribute someone's difficult circumstances or their ill health to some past action they may have done. Or for ourselves, I guess it's just my karma. Now, these things get said a lot, at least in the States, which isn't useful and actually leads to more suffering, and it's not helpful at all to hold it that way. And it's not, I don't think in anywhere in these teachings is there the sense that we would use this understanding of this teaching of cause and effect as a way to try to point to why someone's circumstances are the way they are now. It's not really useful in that way. What it is useful for is helping us look at the choices we make in the present moment, how we respond to life's conditions, you could say. It can serve as a focus point, and in that way, it's useful. Because if we think of, there's an image from one teacher of cause and effect, that flow over time. He had an image of a large pool, like a pond, or a lake, like the lake out here that we are living next to. And if on a perfectly still day, it's completely calm. And if you toss a pebble, a rock in there, there'll be these ripples that go out. And if you toss another one, those ripples will go out and they'll bounce off of the first ripples. And you'll get a third set. And if you keep tossing rocks in, you'll get a very complex series of ripples, those movements, the waves. And cause and effect functions like that. And those pebbles have been getting tossed since the beginning of beginningless time, you could say. There's ripples from everything that has happened, from the weather, from our ancestry, from everything that's ever happened. And so, and our actions are pebbles that we've tossed in and we keep tossing in. And so it gets very, very complicated. And so to say why you're here today, why anything is the way it is, to tease apart the complexity of all those causes that are part of that, it'd be impossible. Where would you start? Everything bouncing off of the previous thing. Can you see this picture? Useful. So we live in an ocean of that. And so one part of that complexity of this chain of cause and effect are the actions that we choose to do, the actions that we do and the results that come from them. They're an aspect of it. And so my sense is that when we're taught to focus on our actions, we're looking at because this is some place where we can have a very direct influence on the rippling of this causal flow, the cause and effect. Because what's been taught in this is that the fruits, the results of our actions, they result from the motivation that is flavoring those actions. So to be very simple about it, I don't want to go on and on, but actions that are born of a wholesome, skillful intention and motivation tend to produce beneficial and wholesome, pleasant, good results. And ones that are born of an unwholesome, unskillful, harmful intention tend to produce difficult, harmful, unpleasant results. And it's not just a one-to-one thing. You can't say, oh, if I do this, this will be the result. But that's the tendency of that energy to flow in those ways. And so we're asked, told to look at the choices we make in terms of our actions, because we can add to this process, we can influence the way it ripples forward, you could say. So you could think of it as a seed that we decide to plant. We can plant a seed of our future happiness and of goodness and ease in our own lives, in the world. We can plant the seeds of suffering, and we have a choice in that. So this, the relationship of this to equanimity has to do with the reflection in the classic teachings on cultivating this quality, has to do with reflecting that all beings have their own life to live, you could say, that their happiness is not dependent on our wishes for them, but on the choices that they make. And that's true for all beings and for ourselves. So there's this reflection. And we have to be careful when we bring a reflection. It's not like, well, you're going to get what you deserve. It can be kind of dismissing. And we actually fill it with warmth, that there's a caring. I wish you well, but I can't make your choices for you, for example. You know, the other night Marie mentioned what can look like equanimity is sort of indifference or kind of not caring or a kind of numbness where we don't feel sort of, well, it's okay, but we're not actually connected. But this quality actually is very warm and fully present. It's a kind of real deep intimacy, so it's filled with warmth and caring and connection. But it also has this balanced view of things that understands that things unfold lawfully, that nature unfolds lawfully, it's not just random, and that our lives will unfold in part based on the choices that we make, the actions we choose to take. It's said in practicing these these Brahma Viharas, the kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity, it's said that that the first one, that they get progressively more difficult in a way, that metta, connecting with this, just friendliness, is said to be easier, and then compassion, because we have to get close to suffering, that's more difficult sometimes for us to be willing to get close to suffering, and to feel joy in the good fortune of others can be hard, because so often tend to compare, and envy and jealousy can arise so much in relation to someone else's good fortune. And then equanimity can be quite subtle, and there's a coolness there. It's harder to feel the heart connection there. But we'll give it a try and see what happens. So as we have in the past, when we have done these guided meditations, inviting you to find as much ease in the body as possible, as comfortable a posture as you can get. Shift your posture now if you'd like to. Bring some ease to some place that feels sore, so we're not starting out in too much discomfort. And as with all the these other qualities, there are many different ways one might approach it as a practice. I'm going to offer just one of those today. It may or may not be something you connect with, so don't worry if it isn't something you feel drawn to doing. And I'll just do a little bit at the beginning here. I'll offer a few suggestions of how we might try to connect with this, and then we'll stay quiet and you can continue with that, or you can go practice one of the other ones if you feel more drawn to that, or let it all go and go to the insight practice. Or just sit here and do nothing at all. That might be the best thing. And that's how I like to begin these periods. So right now, if you feel like you're doing something, stop it. Don't just do something, sit there. There's an expression in the States, at least, don't just sit there, do something. But I'm saying, don't just do something, sit there. I'm reversing it. So just be a living being, just as you are right now. Don't do anything that feels like some kind of practice or something that you're supposed to focus on or think about. It's kind of putting everything down for a few minutes. Anything that you might call meditating or anything that feels like something you're supposed to do or incline towards or cultivate, anything like that. Just sitting very simply. And just let things flow along as they do with sights and sounds and feelings and moods and everything that might show up. Just does that. Just let it come and go, and you don't have to pick it up. Don't have to get involved or claim it as yours. It just doesn't matter how you're feeling now. You might be feeling tired and sleepy or awake. Could be bored or restless or interested. Happy, grumpy. Just let yourself be. Let the body be. Let the mind be. Now we'll add in just a tiny little bit of something that might feel like doing. A slight focus of attention, but very light, perhaps, and only if you want to, either through the breath or through touch, letting the attention come to the area of the heart, center in the middle of the chest, at the base of the breastbone, the sternum bone. You could touch there with your fingertips or your hand or breathe there or not do that. You don't have to do it. Let it be very light. You might notice something there, you might not. You're not trying to create some sensation or experience. Maybe a couple of deeper breaths. Now see if someone can come into your mind, an image or a feeling of somebody maybe someone here at the retreat, or someone in your life at home who you know, maybe it's someone you who works near you in the same place, or someone you see at a store, or the person who brings the mail to your home, or somebody who you don't know, but they're familiar. They're someone you see, but you don't really know them at all. You don't know anything about their life, what they like or don't like, or their how things are going for them. They're just another being. Maybe it's someone here who's sitting the retreat. And you see them around, but you don't have any feelings one way or another about them. Kind of neutral. It's one of the categories that we use in one way of practicing these Brahma Viharas. We say it's the neutral being, someone who we don't have any feelings about, really. But just as we have good days and bad days and joys and sorrows in our life, that's true for this person as well. They have the things they love and the things that are hard for them. They have all the same kinds of things that we have, their own version of that. And their friends and their troubles. Their joys and sorrows. And just as for us, we have choices that we make about the actions we do. That's true for this person also. And so, in this sort of shared humanity, this way that we're all human, we might have a sense that we would wish them to be at ease, wish them to be happy, wish them to be free of suffering and to have good times. Simple things that we might wish for anybody. We also know that their happiness really depends on how they choose to live their life, on the choices they make. So we wish them well, but we can't live their life for them. So we can even bring them to mind. Just the image or the feeling might just come for a brief moment and go away. Just this reflection, I care for you, I wish you well, but I can't live your life for you. Like all beings, though I wish you to be at ease, your happiness and unhappiness depend upon the choices you make, the actions you choose to do, not on my wishes for you. Now, if you'd like to, you could bring to mind someone who's dear to you, Maybe someone who's been in your metta practice or your compassion practice, like a benefactor or a dear friend, family member, someone you do know and you care about, where it's easy for you to hold them in your heart and wish them well, and you know they care for you. And so that sense of well-wishing, of kindness, arises easily. But we also know that their happiness doesn't depend on our wishes for them, but on the actions they do. Not entirely on that, but that's a part of it. I wish you well, but I can't live your life for you. I care for you, but I can't make your choices for you. So with each of these reflections, maybe seeing how it lands in your heart, how it feels there to bring this to mind. Sometimes those we love and care about are doing things that are causing them to suffer, are causing harm in their lives or to those around them. And we can wish them well, wish them to be at ease, but we understand they have to make their own choices. They have to live their life themselves. We can't do that for them. We can't make them see, but we can still care. So we offer this kindness. I care for you, but you have your own life to live. And your happiness depends on the choices you make, not on my wishes for you. So for the next few minutes, you can continue with these reflections, bringing this quality of equanimity to mind. Or you can practice the loving kindness or the compassion or the joy. Or you can let it all go for now and just come back to the simplicity of meeting your experience with awareness. And now, if you haven't already done so, start to let go of this practicing, let go of words and phrases. Let go of images or trying to feel something, any focus for your attention. You don't have to push things away, just let them be, let them fall away if they want to. Letting go of doing, coming back into simply being, just as you are. There's nothing you have to get or get rid of. There's no place you have to go right now. No one you have to be. No doing, no meditation. Just simply being.